Coming up on today's Locked On Dodgers, a continued conversation with Jim Alexander, author of the upcoming book, Dodgers, an informal history from Flatbush to Chavez Ravine. So that's what's on tap, so make sure to keep it Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yo, 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 Dodger fans, welcome to Locked On Dodgers. I'm Vince Samperio, Chavez Ravine Fiends. Solo for the moment. Jeff's conversation with Jim Alexander will continue and be the majority of this episode, but just had a couple quick news and notes before we get into it. But first, before we get into that, just want to thank you or remind you to make Locked On Dodgers your first listen every single weekday morning. We are here Monday through Friday. We are free and available on all platforms and on YouTube. So make sure to check us out or tell your friends, family, and other people to check us out. No real news in the baseball world. Well, I guess not news, but kind of something we already kind of expected. It appears that the two sides, MLB and the players, won't speak again until after the new year, which we kind of already figured since the holidays are coming up and they weren't really that close anyways. So expect more of the negotiations to come in January. No real negotiations coming now. And that's the extent of the news in the baseball world in terms of the lockout. There's a couple little tidbits that came out here in the last few days. One being Max Muncy. One of the beat writers reported that Max Muncy is still expected to be ready for opening day 2022, mentioning that it's opening day and not spring training. So, I'm not sure if he's going to have to still miss some time if they do get into a normal spring training. If it's going to be similar to Cody Bellinger last year where, yeah, he was available for opening day, but he wasn't necessarily available for the beginning of spring training. Either way, the fact that it's his non-throwing arm, it shouldn't affect him too much. He'll still be able to swing the bat. We've seen players before be able to play with torn UCLs, even if if it's not a throwing arm. So hopefully that remains the case. Another real quick news, the OKC Dodgers have new owners. They are now part of Diamond Baseball Holdings, which is part of Endeavor, which is a sports and entertainment company. The Diamond Baseball Holdings bought like 9 teams the other day. I think they bought all the Braves affiliates and then a couple other teams here and there. They're still going to be the Dodgers AAA team. They're still going to be, connected to the Dodgers. Still going to be the OKC Dodgers. But DBH is going to support ticket sales partnerships, get into some NFTs, I think, content strategy, just basically, obviously, the owner of the team and getting them, better associated into the new digital world, I would imagine. But yeah, not much should change in terms of anything else, but that is news, so we should bring it up. That's really all I got. That's all there was to happen in the baseball world. Now, just going to keep talking with Jim Alexander about his new book, Dodgers, an informal history from Flatbush to Chavez Ravine. So that's what's coming up. But first, let's talk about Stance. Stance Sox. I really like Stance Sox, and I have my favorite pair is the one I have that the players wear with the 3 palm trees. And yeah, it's one of my more comfortable socks. I wear them to most Dodger games I go to, or anytime the Dodgers are playing and I'm going to be watching the game, or if I want to wear some socks, they're comfortable. I've had them for about 2 years now and I can still wear them, even though I've worn them a lot and do a lot of walking when I'm at games and everything else. They're still very comfy. They're soft. It's a quality sock. I'm not going to lie. It's a quality sock. But they don't just have baseball. They don't just have Dodgers. They have a bunch of other things. They got other designs. They got Batman, Star Wars, The Office, Harry Potter, Disney, Marvel. They got a bunch of different collaborations, a bunch of different socks you can go about. You can find a sock for just about any moment or any time or any event that you're going to. So make sure to check them out at stance.com. And right now you can get 15% off your first purchase Because Stance believes that the perfect fit matters more than fitting in, and that those who feel good do good. So right now, register for an account at Stance.com. Use the promo code LOCKDOWN at checkout and get 15% off your first purchase. Enjoy the color and comfort of a life less ordinary with Stance. Stance socks. Yeah, go get some. All right, here we go. Right into the conversation with Jim Alexander, and I'll see you later.
You mentioned the Hall of Fame, and, you know, we just recently had a pretty big Hall of Fame election with the two veterans committees, you know, electing a lot of people, and it, you know, including, you know, well, I guess, you know, there's a couple of people who didn't get in that did have Dodgers ties, you know, Maury Wills and Dick Allen specifically. Mm-hmm. Dick Allen only played the 1 year with the Dodgers, but, you know, it was a good year. But then Gil Hodges did get in, and, you know, but when we're talking about pitchers in the Hall of Fame, I've done a couple episodes in the last couple of weeks talking about the Hall of Fame and how, as I've gotten older, I've kind of become more of a big hall guy in my mind, you know, where, I feel like the bar is too high in some places, for the Hall of Fame. And specifically, I feel like the word fame is right there in the name of the place. And I feel like there ought to be at least some room for fame to, give an edge to some guys who maybe don't quite have the stats to be there. And, you know, and when one guy who immediately jumps to mind all the time when I think about that is Fernando Valenzuela, you know, because for, you know, the pioneering, you know, coming from Mexico as a young, you know, 19, 20 year old player, not knowing any English at the time, and stepping in and being as good as he was, and specifically in Los Angeles, where, you know, there was the tricky history between the Dodgers and the Mexican population of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And what Fernando Valenzuela did there, you know, it seems to me like Fernando ought to be in the Hall of Fame simply because the word fame is right there in the title.
Yeah. The thing about Hall of Fame voting, and we kind of get the same thing to a lesser extent with MVP voting, is you've got this electorate that is made up of so many diverse people who have their own notion of what a Hall of Famer should be. I mean, is it about the numbers? Are we looking at the counting stats? Are we looking at the new analytics? My feeling has always been that the impact on the game should be considered. Even, you know, statistics are less important than did somebody change the game. That's why I thought it was ridiculous that Maury Wills got like less than 3 votes in this last Veterans Committee deal. Because if it's not for Maury Wills, Lou Brock's not in the Hall of Fame. Ricky Henderson's not in the Hall of Fame. Tim Raines is in the Hall of Fame because Wills made the stolen base cool again. He transformed the game, and he allowed these other guys to flourish, in my mind. So, but then there's a lot of people who kind of discount that and he didn't have the numbers. I mean, you know, the one number that stands out is 104, but I mean, his OPS that year, his OPS plus that year in 1962 was below 100. So it was below average. So like I say, different people have different ways of determining what a Hall of Famer is. And I don't think that with such a wide electorate that you're ever going to have agreement on that. There are a certain number of people that agree with you. And I kind of agree to a sense that, you know, a guy like Fernando is probably, his importance is probably appreciated more in LA than it is elsewhere. Because, like you said, not only, and I, you know, we lived through that and we understood what a phenomenon he was and how consistent he was until his shoulder gave out. But the idea that Fernando made it cool for the Latino population to return to Dodger Stadium after all those years, I mean, that's even more significant. So I don't know I don't know if that will ever be recognized enough for him to be a Hall of Famer, but I think that in terms of retiring the number, that maybe the Dodgers should sort of rethink the whole thing about, well, it has to be a he has to be in the Hall of Fame to have his number retired. I don't think that should matter. I think Fernando's number should be retired.
And especially since it's unofficially retired anyway.
Right. And if you want to go farther, you know, Steve Garvey's number is retired in San Diego, but it's not retired in LA. So, and you, whether you, whatever case you want to make about Garvey or whatever you thought about him when he was active, I mean, that's a question that needs to be answered as well. That's a discussion that needs to be had.
Yeah. Garvey's another one that I've talked about that, like, it doesn't get much more famous in the 1970s than Steve Garvey, you know, like, you know, Pete Rose was maybe more famous, but, you know, for the most part, I mean, Steve Garvey was, people who, you know, are younger and, you know, living right now when baseball has kind of been surpassed by football and basketball in popularity, kind of don't understand just how popular baseball players used to be. It's almost unfathomable. I don't know if there's been one, you know, probably Ken Griffey Jr. was the last one who was really, really mainstream popular, you know, or Bo Jackson, but that was, you know, partly because of the football too, you know, right. But yeah, back in the 70s, Steve Garvey, you know, he could have been a spokesperson for any company he wanted to be, you know, anybody would have loved to have Steve Garvey. And, you know, the fact that his numbers don't, especially when you look at him through the lens right now of what we understand about baseball now. And that's always tricky for me. I heard somebody say, well, if Steve Garvey had known that not walking was going to keep him out of the Hall of Fame, he would have taken more walks. And, you know, and you know, part of me, the cynical part of me says, well, I think he probably should have known that getting on base was valuable, you know, because the opposite of getting on base is getting out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in his mindset, he was a run producer, you know? And so if you come up there with three.
Yeah. If you're hitting three or four in the order, you know, I mean, in that era, you're not worried about getting on base. You're worried about getting guys in. So your approach then was different. I mean, now you look at a Max Muncy, he might hit in the middle of the order, but his selectivity makes him a better hitter.
Yeah.
But it's all in the way we look at the game now, and we look at it differently than we did then.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I guess guys who are at the top of the order maybe have an advantage at that time because, you know, Joe Morgan, for as much as Joe Morgan railed against advanced stats as an announcer, he was like the poster boy for advanced stats. I mean, his on-base percentage was ridiculous, but he was a leadoff hitter. And so, mm-hmm. you know, it's like he had an advantage because he was allowed to take a walk because he was a leadoff hitter and ran fast. And, you know, mm-hmm. and so if Steve Garvey had run faster, maybe he would have taken more walks. But yeah, it's so, I don't know. It's interesting to the whole Hall of Fame conversation. Getting back to your book, you know, since that's at least theoretically what we're talking about here, you know, how big is this book?
I'm not sure what the page count is going to be. It is like 210,000 words.
Oh, wow. So
that's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot. So it's going to be well north of 300 pages, I would imagine.
Huh. Yeah, that's a big book. That's exciting.
It will be an encyclopedia type book, but it's not going to read like an encyclopedia. What I hope is that people will not be put off by the length or the size of the book when in fact it does come out, because it's going to be kind of bite-sized portions. I mean, I try and break up each chapter into like three or four different segments. So it's the sort of thing where, okay, you don't have to try and read a chapter at a time if you don't want to. If you read just a couple segments and, you know, eventually you kind of get through it and you kind of have a grasp of what the history was about. And I hope it's a fun read. I guess I took the same philosophy for this book that I do for my column, that if it interests me, maybe it'll interest you. because if it doesn't interest me, I don't want to write it.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of the approach we try to take with this podcast too. You know, it's like we come up with topics. Well, I wouldn't want to listen to a podcast about that, so I'm definitely not going to record one about that, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's exciting. Like I like big books, especially, you know, big baseball books, because, you know, the more words, the better, as far as I'm concerned, as long as they are interesting, like you said. What are some of the other, you know, any other tidbits from the book that, like, what's your favorite part of the book?
Oh man, I don't know if I have one favorite part of the book, but one part that I really enjoyed writing was the whole process of getting the Dodgers from Brooklyn to Los Angeles and the role that Roz Wyman played in it. I mean, she was a young city councilwoman. She was elected to the LA City Council at age 22. And one of the planks on her platform when she ran for city council was bringing big league baseball to Los Angeles. And this was like 1952, 1953, something like that. And so she gets elected, and, you know, there is movement at that time in baseball. I mean, the Braves moved to Milwaukee. Philadelphia A's moved to Kansas City. The St. Louis Browns moved to Baltimore. And there started to be a sense that, hey, LA may be in the game here finally. And she was gutsy enough to reach out to Walter O'Malley. She sent him a letter. I think it was like in 1955. I'd have to go back and look. And this is, you know, the Dodgers are getting ready to play in the only World Series that they would ever win in Brooklyn. And all of a sudden O'Malley's getting this letter from somebody in LA. And at first he thought it was a publicity stunt, but she kept hammering away at it, realizing that, hey, you know, he's having trouble getting a stadium in Brooklyn and there's a chance here. And as it turned out, she was as instrumental as anybody in getting the team to Los Angeles. And I really think that through all the years, it's been kind of underplayed. I had a chance to talk to her. I believe it was during the 2020 World Series. And I had a chance to get her on the phone. I loved it. She's in her 90s and she's still sharp and still doing stuff. And it was just an enjoyable conversation. And I'm happy I was able to get that in there and let people know, hey, this is someone who had a large, large impact on getting the team to Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's she's really fascinating. I'm excited to read that part. I've I had read, it was a book about Walter O'Malley. I can't remember the name of the book now. But you know, so she comes up a lot in that book. And so I knew the name pretty well. And then I remember a few years ago, I was at Dodger Stadium and they had her throwing out the first pitch and it hit me. It hadn't even crossed my mind that she's still alive because everybody else from that time period has been gone for a long time. And the fact that because she was so young at the time, you know, and has thankfully lived a long life that she's still around. So that's it's pretty remarkable. You know, we have these links to Dodgers history that, you know, every day, you know, that there's fewer and fewer of those links left. And and she's one that it's really nice that she's still around, you know, and, you know, Carl Erskine is still around. And
BetOnline has you covered all season long, and they've got more props, more odds, and more lines than ever before. Football season's heading into the playoffs. NBA season's just starting to heat up. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all sports action this season. Go make some money with BetOnline. Head to their new updated website on your laptop or mobile device and sign up today. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus if you use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's a 50% welcome bonus after your first deposit if you use the promo code LOCKEDON at BetOnline. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts.
I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Gent, who's made it his mission to meet every living person who played for the Brooklyn Dodgers. And he was the one who told me last week when Don Demeter died that because Don Demeter's daughter had called him to let him know. And so he was the one who ended up breaking the news to Carl Erskine and a couple other of his former teammates. And, you know, and that's kind of been his mindset on that. I should get him on the podcast now that I think about it. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of been his mindset, has been trying to make these ties to Dodgers history while we still have them. Go ahead.
I was going to say, unfortunately, like you say, a book like this, you're trying to cram as much of it in as you can. And you probably missed some things. And I probably underplayed Carl Erskine's impact. And it's one of those things where you just, it's hard to cram everybody in. And I would have, in retrospect, I would have loved to have a segment on Erskine and be able to talk to him and whatnot. And it just didn't happen. Writing this book, most of it was written after the 2020 season. The manuscript was, I think it was May, early May of this year, that the first manuscript was turned in. And then I told him, I'm going to do an epilogue with the 2021 season. So the final version, that last chapter, so to speak, was turned in 2 days after the final game against the Braves. But it's been kind of a living thing for like about the 2 years that I've been working on this thing, 2+ years. So there are probably some important people in Dodgers history that kind of got underplayed, and you know, unfortunately, Carl Erskine was one of them, but he did get mentioned. I believe I did mention the 15 strikeout game in the World Series. So, or 14. It was 14, and then Koufax had 15 to break it. So,
yeah,
there's stuff in there.
Yeah, but even at 210,000 words, you can't fit everything in when you've got 140 years you're talking about.
Yes.
One last question I have, you know. When you're talking about all these big names in Dodger history, you know, and obviously, you know, you're reaching out, you're doing research and presumably reaching out to try to talk to the people involved where possible. Mm-hmm. Two of the biggest names in Dodger history are kind of famously reticent and don't necessarily love being written about, and that's Sandy Koufax and Vin Scully, both of whom, you know, for as much talking as Vin does, he doesn't care much to talk about himself very much. And Sandy Koufax has always been, you know, notoriously private. What was your approach with the two of them?
Well, with Sandy, I have the copy of his autobiography that was released in 1966. I was able to find a copy. So his voice is in this book, quoted from that autobiography. So it is there. And as for Vin, I have talked to him on several occasions over the years. We had a great conversation on the anniversary of Sandy's perfect game, which would be 2015, I believe it was. Because I was doing a piece on that, and I one the sidebar piece was Vin's call of the game. So, and I got a lot of stuff from the number of times that I've talked to him over the years. So a lot of this, there are a few where I reached out to people to interview them specifically for this book. But a lot of the stuff that's in there is stuff that I've picked up either covering the team day to day, or as a columnist going out there and talking to people and getting information and whatnot. So there is a lot of firsthand reporting. All it's not necessarily from the last 2 years, but there's a lot of reporting.
Those notebooks, you probably have hundreds of those notebooks lying around from over the years, and those came in handy.
I keep everything. I mean, I transcribe interviews, and I've got them all on my computer. So
that's awesome.
I keep everything. My wife sometimes, you know, before this, I was keeping them in a file cabinet, and my wife is, God, aren't you going to get rid of that stuff? No, I might need it. Turns out I needed it.
See? Yeah, finally.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. What's the release date? Is there a specific date set?
We don't know for sure. I'm told the spring. Evidently, Amazon has a listing already for pre-order. Okay. It listed a date of May 22nd. And I've talked to a couple of other people, a couple of other authors, and they've said, don't even pay attention to it. It's like they just kind of pick a date out of thin air.
That's so spring. It could we'll be go with then. That.
It could be then. It could be earlier. I'd like for it to be earlier. The only problem is that, you know, we're in a lockout. I would hope that it's settled by then and that people will be able to think about baseball on its own terms and they'll be interested in the book. If it goes too much farther into the season, not good. Not good for the book. And right now, that's what counts. The old baseball writer Leonard Coppett had a saying that the only rooting interest a baseball writer should have is what impacts him or her directly. So that's my rooting interest. Get the lockout solved so I can sell the book.
You hear that, Major League Baseball? Quit being stubborn. Jim's got books to sell.
That's right. You're on the clock, Rob.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about this. This is a lot of fun, and I am really, really looking forward to this book. Like I said, you know, I've read a lot of words that you've written over the years, and looking forward to reading at least 210,000 more of them, because that sounds awesome. So.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm looking forward to it too. And maybe as we get closer, we can do this again.
Absolutely.
All right. That's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Jim Alexander once again for speaking with Jeff and giving us some insight into his upcoming book. Make sure to check that book out when it does come out. It's called Dodgers, an informal history from Flatbush to Chavez Ravine. 140 years of history into one book. So go ahead and go grab that. And that's going to do it for us. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Make sure to make Locked On Dodgers your first listen of the day every single weekday. We're here for you, and we want you to listen to us, and we want you to listen to us. I said the same thing twice right now. But either way, that's how you listen to us. We are free and available where we get podcasts and on YouTube. You can find us on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. DMs are open on those accounts. DMs are also open on our personal ones. Jeff is on Twitter at Snydog. I'm at Vince Samperio. Anytime you have questions, comments, or concerns, free feel to get in there and ask some questions. I know we got a couple that we'll probably get into this week or early next week. Other ways to get a hold of us, you can do a text or voicemail with the number 323-863-LOCK. That's 323-863-5625. Or you can send us an email, lockedondodgers@gmail.com. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us when you get in your car or if you're at home. Play Smart Device Play Podcast, Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.